Hey, everybody. Wendy Sellers here, the HR lady. I'm here with my co-host, JC.
Wendy, it's a pleasure to be back on the show. Let me tell you, life is just that much better. Now it's finally getting warmer. I can't tell you. Let me tell you. It's been a blessing. Is it warm down by you yet?
Yes, it depends on the day. The general answer is yes, it's been warm and sunscreen is necessary down here in Florida already.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. Reading the news and staying up to date on things, you had that cold snap. I think it got down to a frigid 53 degrees or something like that. I was dying on the inside reading the news, you know?
I mean, yeah, that was at 2 a.m. Hey, speaking of Florida, we actually have a guest here with us today who is right up the road for me. I'm in St. Pete, Florida, and we have a guest from Tampa, Florida. Welcome, everybody, to Steve. I'm going to butcher the last name. Steve Gavatorta.
That was perfect. I don't know. You didn't butcher a thing. You could have rolled the R's. That would have been really, really special, but that's okay. No, that was absolutely perfect. So
sweet. Well, hey, welcome. Thank you so much coming. I am so excited for you to be talking to our audience. That you're a speaker, a trainer, a coach, an author. You are certified professional behavior analyst, certified professional values analyst. You're certified in Myers-Briggs, which I love, by the way. I personally do DISC. And you also are accredited coach and trained for emotional intelligence. So, whoa, you got a lot going on. You got a couple books out and we'll talk about a third book that's coming out soon. But thank you again for your time today. I want to hear from you about the culture of respect, preparing people to success and overcoming and learning from failure, which, you know, if you can learn from it, it's a good lesson learned, right? And then just that's the overall concept of reflection. So many people try to avoid failure, but they should be saying, okay, I screwed up. What am I going to learn from it? What are your thoughts?
Right. Yeah, a lot of what you're talking about ties into my second book, In Defense of Adversity, Turn Your Toughest Challenges into Your Greatest Success. I say, even before COVID hit, I stated that we are in a fast-paced, high-tech, ever-evolving world. Change is hitting us faster than ever. Adversity striking us deeper. The speed at which we need to make decisions is getting shorter and shorter, faster and faster, I guess. You know, this is the new way of the world. One of my clients says we are in a VUCA world where volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity are the norm. So this is the world we need to get used to. And it's imperative that individuals to be successful or companies to be successful, they need to leverage adversity to their advantage or be able to face, overcome, and learn from obstacles. And I subscribe to the fact those companies or individuals who can will not just survive these times, they'll thrive in them. In fact, some may companies and individuals may be able to create a point of differentiation or competitive advantage for their companies, for their careers, so on and so forth. So it may be scary and difficult, but within that lies a ton of opportunity.
How do we create as, you know, business leaders, whether you're a manager, whether you're an owner, or maybe you don't even manage people, but you're just leading in your own right in a company, in a position, you know, how do we create that culture of acceptance and acknowledgement?
Yeah, well, you stole two of my words. You must be, that was my first thing, talked about acceptance and acknowledgement. And that is in my book, In Defense of Adversity. But I would say the overarching theme about that is to create a rational thinking culture. Whether you're a leader, you have to practice rational thinking. Whether you're leading your team, they need to be rational thinking people. And that may sound common sense. Of course we know that. But how many of us do stay rational when the proverbial poop hits the fan or when adversity strikes or change hits? Maybe you as a leader do, but do your people? Are you able to keep that rational thinking, that calm demeanor when all these crazy things go on? And may sound simplistic, but I subscribe to the fact those people, those individuals who can practice that are going to win in this world today. Again, it may sound common sense, but how many people know freeze, fight, or flight are common emotional responses to adversity?
Right.
You know, and most people do that. How can we not allow that to happen in the first place is key. So part one is exactly what you said. People need to accept and acknowledge that adversity is a part of life. and acknowledge that it's brought into our lives to help us grow, transform, and evolve into the people we were meant to become, or acknowledge that it's an opportunity for us to not just survive, but thrive, or it's an opportunity to gain a competitive advantage. That whole thought of rational thinking is imperative, especially in acceptance. What I mean by acceptance is when adversity strikes, if I don't accept that that's a part of life, it may shoot me into freeze, fight, or flight. Oh, here we go again. Or, oh, geez, you know, you're put in that emotional state of freeze, fight, or flight. You're no longer rational thinking. So that's why that's the overarching umbrella of rational thinking and the importance of acceptance. If we're accepting of it, we're not going to allow ourselves to fall into an emotional state. We'll stay rational. And if we can say, not only accept it, but acknowledge, hey, there's crazy things going on. How can we, what do we need to do next? How do we make good decisions? How do we think creatively? How do we think out of the box? All those things. When your competition or other people are in that emotional state of freeze or flight, flight, they are no longer productive. If we can function at rational state while others aren't, we're going to have a leg up.
Fantastic point. According to Gallup, 70% of decisions are based on emotional factors, and only 30% are based on rational factors in the workplace.
There you go.
Back to you.
There you go.
That's a big difference. Stats. Yeah, that's a big difference for sure.
Well, you know, when I do workshops, I think people like, what do you mean a rational thinker? You know, I'm right, but most people are not. I use a great quote. I'm paraphrasing, but it's by Viktor Frankl. It's basically, in between stimulus and response, there is an opportunity to act, or, you know, you want when that stimulus hits to the time response, it may be very, very short. But if we've trained our mind for acceptance and acknowledgement, that tiny fraction of time is going to be more in our favor for responding rationally. So I talk about, you know, strengthening yourself between stimulus response so it doesn't fall into a negative emotional state, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing I just wanted to state for our listeners is where we're talking about rational and, you know, getting people to, calm down so they can really say, OK, what's going on here? Please, please, please don't ever tell somebody to calm down.
it's funny you're saying that because I do say that in workshops. Like, how many of you people have heard someone say, calm down, be cool, be rational? And you're like, I am rational, I am calm. But there is brain functionality. There is brain science behind that. It is not, you know, it may sound like someone's just being nice, and maybe they are, but there is scientific fact behind that too. So
JC, got some more stats. I think you have a quote to share with us, huh?
Well, yeah, I know, Mr. Steve, you brought out a Franco quote. I do have a Franco quote of my own that I live by a little bit. It's, I don't need a vacation in the traditional sense like I would if I had a job I hated. But that's from James Franco, a totally different Franco. Rational thought out the window, back to you. But truly, though, I do have some stats on succeeding in the workplace when you're ready. I'm not sure if we're there yet, though, are we?
Okay.
Why not? We're here. Let's
all
do
right.
It.
The average employee is only productive for 60% of the day across all professions. Most studies show that employees are only productive about 60% of the time, and they are more likely to be productive when they're working from home, believe it or not. Back to you.
No, interesting. Okay. Interesting.
I mean, I know I am, but I've been working from home for a very, very, very long time, and it's very difficult if you're remote or in person to be productive all the time. And if you're a manager, a business owner, and you're thinking, oh, I want my people to be productive, 90% of the time or more, well, good luck, because you got to have a very engaging management team, engaging structure. You got to make sure that they are in it to win it with you. And they need to know what that means, you know, do your job. Well, give me the why, where is this going and how, and give me the tools, and then give me feedback and make sure you're recognizing me and letting me know when I screwed something up, but that's okay. We're here to help you. What are your thoughts on that, Steve?
No, I was going to say, going back again to those emotional states, you know, 60% of the time, if something is going on in the workplace, if I'm in emotional state and I shut down, I'm no longer productive. If something happens, I get angry about it. I'm no longer productive. If something happens and I don't want to deal with it, let's act like it's not happening. I'm no longer productive. So this whole emotional state thing, you want to optimize obviously that 60% and push it up. If things are happening in the workplace and we are following into that non-productive state, that 60% is going to drop, number one. Number two, when we're in that emotional state, depending on the breadth and depth of it, depending on the person, we can't actually maybe get out of it right away either. How many can you get unangry like that? Can you get unshut down like that? It may last even longer,
right?
You know, and it goes on. It'll be perpetual, loop, and that leads to non-productivity. That leads to my inability to think clearly. That makes me not be able to solve problems, to think creatively. I may say the wrong thing, which I regret later. So, not allowing that to happen will greatly optimize that productivity. That's what I'm talking about, this competitive advantage. If there's a lot of adversity in the workplace or in our industry or whatever, those companies, individuals can function rationally and optimize, be most productive in the face of this, again, are going to gain a competitive advantage.
I think it's also it's always interesting to me in a I'm a chuckling at a kind of way when I see things on the news or whatever, something happened at XYZ company. It's all over the news. And then for whatever reason, those business owners or managers think that their employees are going to be productive that day. And it's like, oh, no, right. They're emotionally checked out. They want to know what's going on. They want to know how does this affect me, my job, my customers, my friends, my coworkers. So communication is so, so important, especially when emergencies are happening, but just good old regular, making sure that your employees know what is expected of them generally.
That's right.
That week, that day, has anything changed and why? We can't always tell our employees everything of why things have changed, but if we can, today's workers want transparency. They want communication. They want to feel mutual respect that you're going to trust me because you're telling me this information. It's just so important to, that's part of, I know in your book about preparing people to succeed is preparing to communicate with them and be transparent with them as well. And then again, talk about, the culture of reflection. We screwed up, or maybe we didn't, but that went well, it didn't go well. Let's talk to the team about what happened. It drives me crazy when I hear, it's usually in the news that, oh yeah, the executives over here trying to figure out what happened. Why don't you ask the team that was involved in it? I'm sure they'd be more than happy to tell you.
Well, that's one of the four pillars of, adversity too. I practice and I teach my clients on a four-step process called a situational debrief. And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's a four-step process. I talk about re-hardwiring the brain for success. If I had it's never a failure. It's a learning opportunity if we allow it to be. If I can re-hardwire my brain from that perceived failure or perceived unsuccessful event, if I can take advantage and learn from that and benefit from that for the future, then it makes sense. So I talk about what's called a situational debrief, whether it's a successful situation, but more important, a negative situation. It can be this four-step process can be used individually. So hypothetically, if I make a mistake, I come back to my office and I walk through this four-step process so I can understand what I could have done better. It can be a coaching tool for a one-on-one. But to your point, it could be a team dynamic to review what happened again, with a perceived failure. So it's basically first review the situation in full, write it down, capture it, catch it on a flip chart, relive it. So just review the situation in full. Secondly, review outcomes, good, bad, or indifferent. Three, isolate and let's identify key learnings. What did we learn from this? And step four is what will we do next time? So you're reviewing the situation, you're seeing what worked, what didn't work, what were learnings from that, what can we do moving forward? So any situation doesn't go by the wayside. It's not, we lost a client or we lost the business. Let's understand why. So next time we're dealing with something similar, we can handle it differently now. Every situation is a learning situation. That's the beautiful thing about adversity. I talk about facing, overcome, and learning from obstacles. We may have failed, But what's the lesson we can learn so we cannot let that happen again? So never let any, what is it? What's the saying? Rahm Emanuel said it. Never let a crisis go to waste or something to that extent.
Yeah, good
and that's
point.
What a a situational debrief can be used for success or failure. I say perceived failures, because again, if you're acknowledging, accepting adversity as a part of life and you acknowledge it's a chance to let you grow, transform, and evolve, then take advantage of that that negative situation. Let's see what we need to do next time. Let's plant the seeds for the future. So,
very interestingly, according to a 2019 paper published in Nature Communications, the ideal ratio of success to failure for learning new skills and information is 85% success rate to a 15% failure rate. And that's simply because if the challenge is too easy, people just don't learn. And if it's too hard, they're sometimes likely to give up. And according to other studies, employees who reflect on what they've learned at the end of the day, believe it or not, perform 23% better after 10 days. Mr. Steve has got some sound advice, and the stats are there to back it up. Ladies and gentlemen, back to you.
No doubt. You know, again, most companies, one of the things I work on with companies, they create vision, mission, and values, a lot of them. They create strategies and tactics. They create policies and procedures. They invest in training. They do it, but they don't daily reinforce it or revisit it. That's, you know, you can write the greatest vision, mission, and value statements in the world, but if you are not exhibiting that, your people may look at you like a hypocrite.
Yep.
Or it's not, why did you create it if you're not going to use it, or if you're not going to revisit it? If you see a behavior in the workplace that's counter to your vision, mission, values, that's a coaching opportunity. Or if I've invested in sales training and my people aren't using any of those skills, why aren't we reinforcing that training? So most companies create the foundation for success, but once they've created it, they never come back and revisit it, if that makes sense. And that's, and that, you know, those things are created, those foundational elements are created for to help you succeed, but most companies don't reinforce or follow up. Most companies are, you were in that class, you know how to do this. Well, just because I was in a class and I learned a selling skill doesn't mean that every day I'm using it. It may need to be reinforced. You know, and go through that situational debrief. You didn't get the sale. Let's walk through those four steps. And most likely, one of the reasons when you walk through those four steps is basically you didn't practice one of the skills in sales training that you learned, or, you know, you didn't follow policies and procedures or something of that nature. So most companies create the foundation for success, but they don't actually eat, drink, and live it once it's been created.
Thank you for that. Hey, before we wrap up, I just wanted to share some stats of my own here. 94% of entrepreneurs say healthy company culture is vital for success. And 56% of employees rank good workplace culture as more important than salary. So listeners, make sure you understand that. And if you need more information, connect with Steve. He has a couple books out. Speaking of, hey, Steve, don't you have a new book coming out anytime soon?
I do. It's hopefully been 6 weeks. Give a little bit of background on my second book, In Defense of Adversity, Turning Your Toughest Challenges into Your Greatest Success. Part of the content or insights from that book were pulled. I interviewed or surveyed over 60 highly successful people on 6 questions regarding adversity. How do you face adversity? How do you learn from it? How do you prepare for it? Things of that nature. And these people put together such wisdom. I have a PDF file about a half an inch thick. Well, I couldn't put them all in my book, so I honored everyone, at least put one of their, you know, responses in that book. However, the remaining input that they did remained unpublished. It's a gold mine. So my third book is essentially all those insights captured. So it's called Thrive in the Face of Adversity, 300 plus sage insights for facing, learning, and facing and learning from life's obstacles. So I put a little meat around it, more information on adversity, dealing with adversity, rational thinking, but the majority of it is the wisdom that these people supplied in that survey and that questionnaire that I had. It's really touching information. It's these people put their hearts and souls into it, and I can't wait for it to be published.
Well, we're looking forward to it as well. So thank you so much for your time today. For anybody who wants to reach out to Steve, I'll make sure that his information is in my podcast description, or you could just go online to the Steve Gavatorta Group or gavatorta.com. Thank you so much, Steve. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We hope this information has been helpful. Thanks for joining us, and take care.